It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard round the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host Mark Young. And the FISA court's in our crosshairs today, so to speak. So, Mark, you have some things to say about this. I certainly have some things to say about it. There are a lot of things I don't think the American people have any idea what's going on, which is not unusual because half the time, if you're listening to the news, it's not really the news. It's just misdirection. So we're going to clear it up today as far as we can see it and see if we can put Mark's legal mind to work on it and see what we come up with. So, Mark?
Well, Chuck, we're talking about stuff here that you don't see in the news. So the first question becomes, we've established that people within the Obama administration went before the FISA court
four times
using a fake, we'll call it dossier,
right,
which was nothing more than a gossip letter.
Yeah, anybody who's paying attention knows that.
We know that part.
Yeah.
But here's the question. Why are the judges on the FISA court not having a fit about this?
Well, aren't they secret, though? I mean, nobody knows who they are, correct?
Oh, no. We know exactly who they are.
Oh, we do know who they are.
Yes, so
we know.
I have a list of them.
So you have their names.
I have their names. We know exactly who they are.
Hmm.
By the way, of the last four of the last five FISA judges that were appointed, So let me get to how do we get a FISA judge? A FISA judge is appointed by the chief of the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So John Roberts, in his sole discretion, chooses who's on the FISA court.
All right.
John Roberts himself was on the FISA court.
I didn't know that.
In the past. Of the last five judges that Justice Roberts has appointed, four of them are judges that were originally put on the bench by Clinton or Obama.
Really? That's interesting.
Yes. So of the last five, four of them are Clinton, Obama judges.
Okay.
Now, these are judges, Chuck, that are everyday judges. So you got, Thomas Russell. He is a district court judge for the District of Kentucky. Michael Mosman, district court judge for Oregon. Robert Kugler, he's the district court of New Jersey. So these are working district court judges that are also appointed to the FISA court.
So now, once they're appointed to the FISA court, is that all they do for
no.
the? No, they still have other duties.
They're still the regular judge.
Okay. When you say regular judge, are these district judges?
Federal district court judges.
Okay. All right.
So these are just, run-of-the-mill federal district court judges that because of their judicial tenure, their judicial prudence, are selected by the Supreme Court or by the chief of the Supreme Court,
right,
the chief judge, as being qualified to be on this FISA court.
Let me back you up just a minute. Who started the FISA court? Where did this come from? I assumed it was Bush.
The FISA court started under Jimmy Carter.
Oh, okay.
Now, it kind of grew out of something which was called Title III of the Omnibus Crime Act of 1968. But then 10 years later, Jimmy Carter signed in the FISA court rule. Now, the FISA court rule, so, Chuck, this is like everything in government. It started out with good intentions.
Right. And it ended up where it is today.
So it started out during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
When we were worried about Russian spies infiltrating. And if those Russian spies were infiltrating, we needed to wiretap them.
Mm-hmm.
Like anything, this law, this FISA law, has gone through revisions. And FISA, by the way, so people understand, stands for Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. So that's what it stands for. So the idea behind it is, if the attorney general goes before a FISA court judge and says, we have this evidence that this foreign person from this other country is communicating inside our country and trying to spy or trying to do harm. We need the right to listen to that person. Well, that doesn't seem unreasonable, does it?
No.
Now, under the Patriot Act, that was under George W. Bush after 9/11, 9/11 threw things into such a panic that we decided to let the pendulum swing too far. Now, Chuck, think about something. This is something that I'd said a couple of weeks ago. America gives up sovereignty when there's a disaster, a war, or a crisis, right? That's how you get people.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 was one of those events because people were shocked that foreign, you know, nationals could come into our country, get on airplanes, and blow up our biggest buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, America gave up more freedom. So under the Patriot Act, these powers were expanded. So now what happens, and there's some parts of this that I haven't even told you yet that are going to just curl your hair. So first off, under the current FISA Act, Chuck, I can go to the court and I can say, okay, I have this foreign national that I think is spying. Now, I have to convince the court that I have belief that my information is accurate.
Credible evidence.
Right. So we're saying that I, as an attorney for the AG, am saying, I believe this. Okay.
Yeah.
And I believe that the foreign national that I'm discussing is not on U.S. soil. Because, by the way, if he's in this country, even if he's a foreigner in this country, I can't get a FISA warrant. So I can only get a FISA warrant if he's in another country. Now, under the old act, I could listen to the foreign person, but I had to dismiss the Americans that he may have been communicating to.
Well, not dismiss them. You just couldn't.
I couldn't use that information.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, under the new act, we have two things happening. One, first off, we have the NSA. The NSA right now records every phone call and every email that all of us are making.
This is Clapper, was Clapper,
yep.
Right?
So, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so all this information.
Who said that we are not listening to anybody before Congress, and they went, well, maybe some people.
It's all being recorded. Okay. Now, once they get a FISA warrant, I can not only get access to, we'll call it the wiretapping, but I can now get access to everything that is in the NSA files that person communicated to. But it gets uglier. Now I can listen to whoever is subsequent to the conversation. So now if I get a FISA warrant on, let's say, Carter Page, because he knows somebody in Russia, and I convince someone that this person in Russia might be a spy, now I can actually listen to everything Carter Page is doing. But it gets worse, Chuck. Because now that Carter Page, so think about this as like a set of dominoes. So Russian subject A talks to Carter Page. Now I can listen to Carter Page, but guess what? Now I get to listen to everybody that Carter Page talks to.
Yeah.
Because now the web spins out.
Right.
So now, if you think about it, I can pretty much listen to the whole country.
Well, you can surveil anyone that Carter Page is listening to, along with him, along with the Russian, along with whoever, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing.
So Carter Page calls.
So can you? So then let's take it another step. If Carter Page talks to person A in Oklahoma, can you then listen to everything person A in Oklahoma?
Correct.
Everybody he talks to?
If Carter Page calls and orders a pizza, I can spy on the pizza parlor.
Mm-hmm. I got you. I see where it's going. I see where this is going.
So Carter Page calls and orders a Domino's pizza.
I got it.
Yeah. Now I'm spying on a freaking pizza parlor.
Mm-hmm. So anybody he contacts, and then whoever he contacts, you can spy on them too.
Correct. Now this is how we got think about it. This is how Mueller ended up issuing warrants for a catering company.
Is that the warrant in Russia?
Right. It was for an American catering company that was owned by Russians.
By a Russian. Mm-hmm.
So it was a catering company. Because somebody called the catering company.
That was connected to Carter Page somehow.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
So somebody needed a ham sandwich. Somebody was throwing a party and needed to bring some ham sandwiches over. So now I'm spying on the sandwich makers. Mm-hmm. Now this court is grossly out of control. Now check this out. The FISA courts have issued 33,000 FISA warrants since their existence.
That's in the 70s, I'm assuming.
From 78. However, after 9/11, the number of FISA warrants doubled every year.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like the national debt.
Out of 33,000 warrants, they rejected 12.
Well, I wonder what they were.
Well, got to remember, when the FISA court meets, they meet in a secret underground bunker near the White House.
So these people, let me get this straight. It seems like these people, these judges in the FISA court, are predisposed to rubber stamp anything, because by the time it gets to them, according to their predicate or precedent, whatever it is, by the time it gets to them, everything has been thoroughly researched, thoroughly evidenced, and they believe the people who are coming before them to present this request, and they say, fine, got it.
You've got a better chance of winning the daily lottery than you do having a FISA warrant rejected.
Mm-hmm.
If that puts it in perspective for you.
Yeah, it does. It's yeah. Sounds very much like government.
So when these guys went before the FISA judge.
But there's also, it also involves a certain amount of trust on the FISA court judge, that he trusts who comes before him because he's trusted them in the past. They know what the rules are. They follow the rules according to him, as they're supposed to. And he assumes that they do. And then does anyone check on the people who present these issues before the FISA court? I mean, does anybody go out and say, look, you know, we need to do some background on this, make sure that you're right. Or do they just accept whatever's put before them? Apparently they do, except for 12 different cases.
Well, this happened back in 2002. In May 2002, John Ashcroft,
yes,
who was the attorney general,
mm-hmm,
he released an opinion, and what he showed that the FBI and his own Justice Department officials had supplied erroneous information to the FISA court in more than 75 applications for warrants and wiretaps, including one signed by FBI Director Louis Freeh. And he was rebuffed.
What does that mean? They didn't go out on a date. He was rebuffed.
The court rejected his claims.
Well, so, excuse me. You just said that he got all of these FISA.
He discovered that they were all fraudulent.
Who discovered it?
Ashcroft.
Ashcroft discovered that his own FISA requests were.
And the FBI. Had put forth over 75 applications that were fraudulent.
So you're saying Ashcroft's DOJ and Ashcroft's FBI were putting together bad FISA requests, and Ashcroft was the one who found out and exposed his DOJ and his FBI?
Correct. And the FISA court and
rebuffed him?
Right. The FISA court and the chief of the Supreme Court blew him off and said, that's not happening. It's not an issue. We're not doing anything about it.
Well, that's interesting.
So what we have here, Chuck, now let me add to this, that not only do they meet in an underground bunker, the only people present is a FISA judge and an attorney sworn to secrecy working for the DOJ. They're in a cement bunker that can't be heard. There are no records. Whatever records are kept on the warrant are secret and sealed. You can't see them.
Boy, what could possibly go wrong with that?
And Congress has no oversight over the FISA court.
Does anyone have oversight over the FISA court?
The Chief Justice.
Okay.
Is the only person with oversight over the FISA court. Now think about this. The reason you have a judge, the whole purpose behind the police going to a judge for a warrant is that we know that it will be incumbent upon law enforcement to be aggressive, to go after the bad guys. And it will be normal for law enforcement to, from time to time, overreach their authority. The purpose behind a judge approving a warrant is that the judge takes a look at what law enforcement is doing and applies the laws of the Constitution to that warrant. Such things as the Fourth Amendment, which is people's rights to privacy in their home and their things and their papers. So the judge has to look at this and say, the risk involved here, the crime involved here, the danger that's involved here is to such a level, and the evidence is so strong that I, as a judge, am going to make a decision to remove this individual's Fourth Amendment right. Okay, that should be a very big, solemn, high bar. And that's why you have these judges. But in the world of FISA courts, the odds on getting a judge to say that is 0.03%. The FISA court is a rubber stamp for the FBI and the AG's office. There is no security. The DOJ. There is no line of protection for the American people. So, Chuck, just when you thought that was bad enough, let me explain something.
But you've just said something that is alarming to me, and that is, in the early 80s, all of the stuff that we suspect has gone on now with Rod Rosenstein, with Comey, with the FISA court, it's all happened before. Maybe in a different context, but it's all happened before. It wasn't spying on someone who was running for president. It was something else. See, this whole thing's been happening all along.
Mm-hmm. There are, by the way, 11 FISA judges.
Actively all the time, or there
yes.
have been?
No, there are 11 at all times. Mm-hmm. They are appointed by the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. They serve 7-year terms. They are non-renewable. You can't get put back on. FISA court judges are not subject to confirmation hearings.
They're appointed.
Right, but there's no confirmation. Congress has no oversight. This is like a shadow government.
It is. It's exactly what it is.
Now, you think that's bad enough, right? But it's not. So, now I'm going to explain another law to you. There is another law that is called Section 215 of the Business Records Law. Well, that sounds pretty
benign.
Simple, doesn't it? Yeah, it sounds pretty benign. This is a law that came into play in 2008. Now, are you ready for this? This is the FBI's ability to write a warrant for search and seizure and for wiretapping and for spying, where they don't even need to go to the FISA court.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are cases. So remember we talked about there were 12 cases that were rejected?
Yes.
We know that 2 of those cases were rejected twice, so the FBI just used Rule 215 and didn't even bother going back to the FISA court. So under this new law, the FBI has the ability to write their own search warrants. So as example, as I said, after being denied twice from the FISA court for an order to collect records from an individual, a secret report reveals that the Bureau subsequently wrote its own order and went through with the surveillance regardless of the court rejection. So under this new rule, the way that this works, they use this NSL, and the way this, it's called the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. Notice how it says Privacy Act, so it makes it sound like they're protecting.
Yeah, it's always, it sounds like, but it's not.
And Congress added additional powers to this during, guess what time? The Patriot Act, which made it even stronger. So under this rule, they can go directly. So an FBI agent can now write a we'll call it a warrant because it's not really a warrant, but he can write a warrant saying he wants to spy on certain individuals. He can go to the director of the FBI, which, as you know, was James Comey. And if the director of the FBI authorizes it, they don't even have to go to a judge.
So basically, you're saying that they can surveil without precedent. Because if you listen closely to what Barr said, he said, look, I think the Trump administration has been spied on. And then Comey and Clapper and Brennan all went on television and said, yes, well, they weren't spied on, but they were surveilled. But we had precedent for it.
So, well, sure, because they call it surveillance.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Instead of spying.
It doesn't matter what they called it. The point is that they said they had precedent for it. And Barr says, I want to know what kind of precedent you used, if there was indeed a precedent. And so was it just suspicion? We think this is going on, so we're going to surveil these people. We're going to spy on them. I think the American people at this point, I think, you never know. I hate to say, because there's so many people that always say the American people want this and the American people feel this way. I can't speak for the American people. I can only speak for what I think I know. And what I think I know is something's rotten in D.C. There's no question about it. The Trump campaign was absolutely spied on. There's no question about it. I don't know what kind of precedent you need in order for that to happen and make it legitimate. Because to my knowledge, this has never happened before, ever. Use government power in the DOJ, the FBI, the intel community to literally run against a person who's running for president and use it to your advantage and the advantage of the Democrat candidate. I mean, I don't know if that's ever happened to my knowledge. And that's really what this is all about, is trying to dethrone, defame a sitting president, a duly elected president, and run him out of office or prevent him from getting into office.
We have an FBI and a DOJ through Patriot Act rules and through the FISA court that now have the ability. And by the way, when the FBI does their internal one, it doesn't even have to be a foreigner. Mm-hmm. Just to remind
you.
It
sounds like they've got any, in other words, it sounds like to me that they have anything to them as a precedent. They can just make it up.
They have completely gutted the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
Now, this is, by the way, this is what's at the root of Cheryl Atkinson's case. The lawsuit that Cheryl Atkinson has against the FBI and the DOJ, because they spied on her, they hacked into her computer, they stole her emails, listened to her phone calls.
Exactly.
She was not a criminal. They had no right to do it. She was an American citizen.
She was not communicating. They did it with Rosen, too.
They did it with Rosen.
They did it with the AP. Obama did.
And now Cheryl Atkinson cannot get justice because they won't give her discovery. Now, the reason they won't give her discovery
is it's all secret.
Well, that's the problem. So her attorneys send an order to the FBI to take a deposition. Their order says that they wish to depose the FBI official who did the following things. The FBI says, well, it's incumbent on you to tell us the name of that agent. So if you can't tell us the name of the agent, we're not providing you anyone.
Mm-hmm. Slick.
Now, her case will end up going up to the Supreme Court. If she wins her case at the Supreme Court, the Fourth Amendment will stand. If she loses that at the Supreme Court, we have now breached the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. It no longer exists. And under these rules, it no longer exists. We need Cheryl Atkinson's case
to
reestablish the Fourth Amendment.
That's interesting. What an interesting way to look at it. You know, this doesn't affect the normal person, the average person out there. They think, well, that's her problem, or that's Trump's problem, or that's Carter Page's problem, or whatever. But it's really our problem. It's our Constitution. It's not theirs. It's our Constitution. It's so weird because I constantly do this when I'm tweeting. And I keep thinking, you know, is this government of the people, for the people, by the people? Is it really? Or is it just at the people, suppressing the people, doing what they want in spite of the people? And it really seems to be the latter instead of the former.
Right now.
We keep moving in that direction.
These kind of rules, Chuck, this is Stalin kind of authority.
Yeah, well, we elect these people and these unelected bureaucrats then make their own rules, which is really strange. I mean, you're talking about the deep state. These are bureaucrats that literally make their own rules. They don't have to be in Congress. They don't do it in Congress. They do it through various committees and whatever department they sit in. They make all these rules, which they're not rules, they're laws. And then we have to follow them, and they're made up by appointed bureaucrats.
And therein lies the issue, because as you know, our country was built on being a country of laws, not a country of men.
Right, exactly.
Okay, but now a man sits in a concrete bunker with no supervision and no oversight and no consequences.
For the good of the country.
And no records, and decides whether your Fourth Amendment right should be tossed out today or not. Okay, how is that a country of laws?
You know what I'm thinking as we discuss this, because it's a little tricky and a little wonky. I'm just wondering, how do you get people to look at this and say, well, this is wrong. We need to change this. How do we change it? How do we get here? And how do we get out of here? And how important is this in my life? And does this have anything to do with how much money I bring in a year, or whether my taxes, my health care, my whatever it is? It seems like it's so far down on the priority list. And that's where they start, way down in secret. And then they creep up to where it really does matter. And by that time, you've lost.
That's correct. Because now, when does it, give me an example. You're right. Somebody is saying, well, this is happening at a level that will never reach me.
Exactly.
I'm not Carter Page. I'm not Donald Trump. I'm not Papadopoulos. Why do I need to worry about it?
You may be the pizza parlor that talked to one of them.
Right. And you're the pizza parlor that talked to one of them. And I listen in on a phone call, and I find out that at your pizza parlor, you know what? You skim every fourth pizza off the cash register to make a little bit of extra cash without paying taxes on it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now I'm coming after. So now I hand that information over to the IRS, and now I'm coming after you for tax evasion. This has a way of making its way further and further down into the population.
Of course, people would say, well, if you're skimming off the top and the government finds out, then good for them, bad for you.
But do we not have a right to privacy?
Yeah, but we don't have a right to break the law. That's breaking the law. So have you got another example where you're not breaking the law and they come get you anyway?
Well, what about you're an individual who is having conversations where you're discussing the government and you're against the government?
Mm-hmm.
What if you're having a conversation saying, I think what this government is doing is wrong. I think that it needs to do this. I think this should be changed. I think that should be changed.
You mean like in communist China and communist Cuba and communist Venezuela and communist everything else, that they check on everything that each individual is saying and then hold them responsible and then put them in re-educational camps? You mean that?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, so we're going down that same path is what you're saying.
We're opening the doors to it. We've seen this happen under Obama. Think about this, Chuck. The IRS was used to go after the Tea Party.
Yes.
Under the same direction. Because this was the government using its power to go after what should be sovereign individuals because the government disagreed with their political belief.
You know, speaking of something, when you say that, this kind of gets away from what we're talking about, but involves all the characters. Comey, Clapper, Brennan, all of these guys have made these political statements on CNN and MSNBC and all the other liberal outlets that are Pravda in this country, I believe. By the way, I'm going to plug something that I wasn't asked to plug, but I'm going to plug it anyway because I've been listening. Mark Levin's new book, you should buy it and find out what the press is really doing in this country and how it's happening and the history behind it and where it's going. You really should. I'm going to buy it. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to. So the point is that all of this stuff takes place and it just seems like it doesn't affect us as individuals, but it actually does. It'll eventually come down to us because that's where it's going. It's total control, total power over everything that we have given up for security.
When you look at Cheryl Atkinson, and here's how this does get down to us.
Well, let's look at this though. Why were they spying on Cheryl Atkinson?
Because she had sources and they wanted to know who the sources were.
I will. Okay. And why were they spying on James Rosen?
I believe, what was the Rosen deal for? Was it a sources issue? It might've been sources again.
So they're trying to find out who's giving them information. And yet at the same time, we know Comey gave him information. And yet he's, you know, so far scot-free. There's really a circular firing squad that's going on within the complex of these bad individuals who were in the Obama administration. And they're starting to fire at each other. I didn't say this and you didn't say it. Loretta Lynch just immediately came out and said, I didn't tell James Comey to say it wasn't a matter. He made that up. Well, somebody's lying.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton.
Right. And you're talking about a group that are all known liars. So how do you pick the winner?
Exactly. So the other part of that is while this is going on, you got, what's the guy's name? Jeffrey, under Barr, who this prosecutor out of Connecticut, I think he is. I can't think of his last name, but anyway, Dahl or something like that. He's going to get involved in all of this down to the nub, and the IG is going to have his findings come out in within a month or so. So when all this stuff starts to spread, I wonder how AG Barr is going to handle this. And I also wonder, as you watch them attack Barr, they've attacked Trump. He's come in and he's been a disruptor. Now you got Barr saying, we need to clean our act up. And I need to clean the AG up. I need to clean the FBI up. I need to clean this mess up. And they are all under this incredible attack by the administrative state to shut up and go away and recuse themselves or to retire or whatever. And I think there's real fear of this FISA court because apparently, from what I understand from Mark Meadows now, whether he knows or not, and apparently he does, so he says, all of this stuff on the FISA court is going to come out. That Trump is going to finally, declassify it. It's going to come out, and the American people are going to know what the crap happened. And boy, they are not happy about that.
The president is the only person who has the authority to declassify this.
Right. And he's been threatening to do it for, a year? And now it looks like, the rubber is going to meet the road.
He needs to declassify this and let the rubber meet the road because the rubber stamp's been meeting the road all the way along the line on this thing.
But look
this
who's under attack.
This court needs to come to an end.
The people who are investigating all of this and looking at it, they're the ones under attack.
And this is why this ought to matter. Because when we think about we're just individuals and this isn't going to affect us, well, it does affect us because when someone amongst us, let's say a Cheryl Atkinson, decides to do some investigating and they start to find out that illegal things are happening.
Right.
Do we the people want to have a government that can quash that and prevent us from knowing the truth by spying on reporters?
Well, she's someone who literally upholds the First Amendment, who is doing what she's supposed to be doing, and that's investigative reporting. And she's being, you know, taken to task for it, along with other people. She's not the only one, but she's certainly most visible at this point. It's fascinating to see all this stuff going, because once it leaves the political realm, with Clapper saying what he's saying, Brennan on CNN saying what he's saying, Comey, you know, running around the country saying what he's saying. Now it's coming down to not political anymore, where you can say anything and there are no lines. Now they're coming down to the legal part of it, where there are lines and they're all going nuts.
We need oversight over this FISA court. Some of this power needs to be stripped. The FBI needs to be stripped of being able to issue their own surveillance warrants. That is zero check and balance. That is nothing more than a law enforcement agency saying, you, Chuck Woolery, are a bad person. In our opinion, we're going to spy on you. And there is no one who is going to stand up for your constitutional rights.
And you can't afford to defend yourself, believe me.
If you even know it's happening.
Right. Well, eventually you will.
But you have no defense to this. That needs to come to a stop. The FISA courts need to be stripped of an enormous amount of this power. And there needs to be oversight over this organization. Right now, they have zero supervision. There is no cost. This is the reason, Chuck, why the judges aren't coming out and saying, damn you, James Comey, for lying to me. Because they rubber stamp everything. Right. They know they're to blame.
Right.
So we just approve everything. They've rejected 12 warrants out of 33,000. That's not even a rounding error.
And who warned us about this? Who was the founding father that warned us about this? That you give up your liberty for security?
Benjamin Franklin.
I mean, this goes back so far, understanding what government can do to you and how it can hurt you as a person, as an individual, and not allowing it to get to that point. And here we are at that point. And people are saying, but our security, what about your liberty? Which we just take for granted every day in this country anyway.
Yeah, Ben said those that are willing to trade freedom for a bit of temporary security deserve neither.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a direct quote right there.
And that's the long and the short of this. Chuck, let's take a quick break for our friends over at Blue Emu. I'm going to come back and tell you about my visit to Canada.
Okay, oh, can't wait. Blue Emu works fast and you won't stink. This episode of Blunt Force Truth is brought to you by Blue Emu Pain Relief Products. Now, I've been in show business for many years now, and I'm not slowing down, but I can use a little help every now and then. Blue Emu's family of products are made in America and have become a staple in my life. The deep penetrating formula of Blue Emu Original is best for supporting my muscles and joints, and I'm sure you've seen it. It's on the shelf in a blue and white jar. I also use Maximum Arthritis for any arthritic pain and the Lidocaine Cream for numbing pain relief. Not only do these Blue Emu formulas work great, there's no chill, no burn, and no odor. Blue Emu, it works fast and you won't stink. Available at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Amazon, and other fine retailers.
All right, Chuck, I want to talk about Canada. I'm going to bring you up to speed really quick here.
Obama-backed
judge upholds House Democratic subpoena for Trump's tax record request.
What a surprise. Well, you know, the thing is, this will be just a court battle. It'll go all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will knock him down like they knocked down all the other leftist judges that are there.
And they want 10 years of his records going back to when he was a private citizen.
Yeah, sure.
Now, the Congress has oversight authority, but they have to validate that the reason that they need the information directly applies to congressional work. What is Congress working on? What bill are they working on? What law are they making?
None.
That requires 10 years of a private citizen's tax records.
Well, they're not making any laws on anything right now. They're just in investigation mode.
It's unbelievable. So I'm going to catch up to speed on Canada here. So I was in Canada for the week. I was there for a training program. I was there at the University of Toronto. It's a beautiful campus, by the way. And spent a week there with Mike Mandel, who was teaching. It was NLP and hypnosis training. So in the course, there's two things I wanted to go over with you. One, in the program, we had a lot of doctors. And I got a chance to sit down with one of the doctors who's a Canadian doctor.
MDs.
Wonderful guy. MD, wonderful guy. And I was asking him about how does he get paid? How does the system work? And what I realized after talking to him, and this is what we want. We want to have this socialized medicine, you recall. The way that the Canadian doctor gets paid is he is incentivized to not deliver treatment to the patient.
Oh, well, that's helpful.
So here's how they get paid. A doctor, a family practitioner, has a subscription base. So how many people want to be on his list? So you have to declare who your family doctor is, your general practitioner. Now that you've declared your general practitioner, follow with me here. Your GP gets a payment every month because you're on his list, whether you come in the office or not.
Yes.
So he gets paid a monthly subscription fee because you're on his list. Now, this particular doctor has 2,200 patients.
How much per patient?
$200.
$200 per patient.
Okay. Right. So this particular doctor is making a great living.
200 patients, man.
He has 2,200.
I said 2,200, man.
Right. So, and I'm not talking about this particular doctor, but I'm talking about human nature now. So the way the system's designed, I have 2,200 patients. If I don't see any of them, I get all the money.
I get paid anyway.
Right.
It's kind of like communism. You don't have to work. You just have to, you know, show up.
So if I
never show up.
Now, I do want to keep my patient list because keep in mind, my patient could quit and go to another doctor.
Or die.
Or die off. But regardless, I have no incentive to see, I have no incentive to hurt myself and see a lot of patients today. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about what that does. So the doctor's getting paid to give you healthcare, whether he sees you or not. So what happens? You call the doctor, I need to come in and see you. Okay. How's September 15th for you? It's May right now. How's September 15th?
Right.
Because guess what? I've got your money anyways. I'm getting paid. Why do I need to worry about you getting in early? Mm-hmm. Now, on top of that, the fewer people I see, because remember, I get paid the monthly doctor fee, but I still bill Health Canada for any additional things you need, right?
Right.
The fewer people I see, what happens? The less I'm billing Health Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So they're controlling costs by incentivizing the doctor, which makes the doctor now incentivized to provide a minimal amount of treatment.
You know, you said something to me. You had some friends in Spain, a girl that used to come stay with
yes.
you, and her father was a doctor.
Her and her father are both doctors.
Oh, she and her father are both doctors. And how was that working over there? You explained it to me at one time. I wasn't really clear.
Well, it's amazing over there. So they have a nationalized healthcare over there.
Right.
But over there, they work for the government.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example. This young woman is an MD with a specialty. She has a hard time finding a job. Now, one of the reasons, right. And why does she have a hard time finding a job? Because education is free in Spain. So doctors aren't unique.
So what you're saying, they're overrun with doctors?
They're overrun with everything because education's free. Mm-hmm. So a woman like her, who was a top of the class doctor with a specialty, who's very bright, very good at what she does, earns about $2,500 a month.
Wow.
$2,500 a month.
And what did her father earn?
Her father is actually the chief of a local hospital. So he was making like $4,500 and then a month, and then pulling double and triple shifts in the emergency room to get extra daily fees for working overtime in the ER. So this guy's my age. He's a doctor who is a highly renowned doctor with multiple specialties. He's in his 60s, and this is a guy working double and triple shifts to make a living.
And so he's basically, head of the hospital. Once government gets involved, it takes all the incentive out of whatever you're doing, whether you're a doctor or whatever it is. They just take the incentive out. It's the communist model.
Well, in the European model, the doctors are relegated to making no money. In the Canadian model, the doctors are actually being paid off to not provide services. So there's two different models there. Neither one of those models benefits the patient.
How does their country get away with this? How do the people allow this to happen and then say, we love our system?
Well, it's free, Chuck. I have free health care. It doesn't matter if it works. I may never get to see the doctor, but it's free. You Americans have to pay for it. I don't have to pay for the health care that I have a hard time ever getting. So walking around Toronto, something jumped out at me, and that is Canada is much more socialist than we are. They're much kinder and friendlier people. And they spread the wealth around. They don't have the, you know, crazy wealthy people like we have. Taxes are insane.
Always come to the United States. I know so many Canadians that have come to the United States and done extremely well. Alan Thicke is one of them, okay? What's his name? He plays piano. That's a friend of mine that I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, he was... Dan Aykroyd's another one. I mean, there's so many Canadians, especially in my business, who have come from Canada and done extremely well. David Foster's who I was thinking of. Justin Bieber. I mean,
oh, is that right? Okay. So anyways, Toronto, they have these crazy high taxes. I mean, the sales taxes are insane. The income taxes are insane. But they take care of the poor. They're more compassionate than we are. Except... spending a week in Toronto, I was overwhelmed with homeless people everywhere.
Well, look at our country.
I get it, but they're not supposed to have it. This is socialism. Why are your streets covered in homeless people if you have the mindset, you know, you have Tiny Dancer running things over there where... where, you know, everyone has a home, everyone has a place to live, everyone has food, but homeless people everywhere. I was in a high-end store in Toronto on Bloor Street, a very high-end specialty store. A guy grabs my arm from behind me. I spin around, and it is a homeless guy who came into the store, grabbed my arm, and started demanding money.
Give me your money?
Hey, man, give me some money. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally physically grab the back of my arm from behind. This is what's going on in Toronto. So my question is, if socialism is the panacea that resolves all of this issue, why isn't it resolving these issues?
Well, we know full well that socialism doesn't resolve any panacea of problems. It creates them. I mean, we know that. We know this for a fact. Anybody who has eyes in their head can look and see what socialism leads to. I remember my friend, Dr. Burns in Kentucky, who, you know, spent a little time in Moscow. He said, I've never in my life And this was back when it was the USSR. And he said, it was the most depressing place I've ever been in my life. He said, from the minute we touched down to the minute I left, I couldn't wait to get out. Everybody watches you. You can't go anywhere without telling someone where you're going. It is the most oppressive environment I've ever seen. I don't know how these people stand it. But this is what you get when you start electing these people who are socialists and you opt to have a socialist government.
You know, I'll leave you with a couple of last thoughts on college campuses. I was talking about the campus in Toronto. Here in the U.S., we now have 75 American colleges that are offering black-only graduation ceremonies.
I saw that today.
Isn't that what Dr. King fought?
Are they going to have, then are they going to, if this starts, and you're going to have, then you're going to have just women's graduations, and forget men's graduations, you won't have those anymore. They'll just be shipped in the mail. And you can just have black graduations, women's graduations. They just keep dividing us, don't they? And then you'll have only Indian graduations and only, it's like, it's crazy.
But isn't that segregation?
Of course it is. In its purest form.
So, these are people that are supposed to be looking up to Martin Luther King, who fought to end segregation, who are now demanding segregation.
We really are living in an insane world. I've seen things go off the rails a few times in my lifetime, and I've lived a long time, as you know, but I've never, ever in my life experienced anything like this. And it is all from the left. It is all progressivism. It's all part and parcel of where that leads us, and it's a bad place. There are countries in this world who have built walls around themselves to keep their people in. We are trying to build a wall to keep people out. And everybody says, it's a horrible place, America. Why would you build a wall to keep people out? Why do people want to come here if it's so horrible?
Shouldn't need a wall.
Yeah, right.
We should be building a wall to keep our own citizens from running off to Mexico if it's so bad.
Yeah. Right.
So you're familiar with what the SAT score is?
Yes.
SAT is now going to introduce something called the adversity score.
Yeah, I saw that as well today, and I didn't have time to read through it. Adversity, you're adverse to what?
They will have 15 factors, including such things as the crime rate where you grew up, the poverty level of where you grew up, the poverty level of your high school. So what they're saying is now, when you go to take the SAT score, when you come in, if you say, my father was an alcoholic and abused my mother, well, then we'll give you a few extra points. Well, I lived in a bad neighborhood. Oh, you get a few extra points. My high school was low income. Well, you get a few extra points.
Well, this doesn't have to do with anything with education.
Well, that's the point. The point is we're now shifting away from the idea behind an SAT score was to get the hardest working and brightest students right into the best schools. We're now saying we're no longer concerned with performance. We're no longer concerned with ability. We're no longer concerned with talent. We're only concerned with leveling the playing field. How does leveling the playing field get us the next breakthrough in cancer? How does it get us the next breakthrough in science? How does it push the space program forward when we argue that a less talented, less intelligent, less motivated person needs to be a scientist instead of the person who is highly motivated and skilled at it? So we're going to give that person a lower education.
Social engineering has been going on a long time. And again, it's always by the left, never by the right. You can't socially engineer anything that's successful. It doesn't happen. Leveling the playing field is the playing field. You get on it to compete. So what you're trying to do is take competition out of the playing field. So it's no longer the playing field.
It's unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
It is unbelievable.
It defies the gravity of reason. It really does.
Well, my friend, that should wrap us up for today, folks. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, please do so. Go over and hit the subscribe button over at iTunes or download and use the Podcast One app that you can put right on your phone and At the Podcast One app, you'll not only get Blunt Force Truth, but you can get great shows like Charlie Kirk and Laura Ingraham and lots of other great shows right there at the app.
Yeah, thanks very, very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show today, and we'll see you next time on Blunt Force Truth.